Hour number two, special Sunday edition of the Chase and Big Joe Show. Chase McCabe and Adam Vingan with you. Hank Williams Jr., Boogie Bar, 419 Broadway. We're right here downtown, right next to Bridgestone Arena. So if you're headed down early, come on by. See us. We're on the rooftop. Got a nice little crowd that has built here on the roof. And it's a beautiful view, and it's a beautiful day. A little breeze in the air, sunshine. You know, this is let's see.
It's playoff weather.
It's playoff weather, and is it real spring or fake summer? I would almost put this in the fake summer category here in Nashville, Tennessee, because, you know, we have about seven seasons, and you get about six of them in 1 week. So that's how we have the old phrase around here of, if you don't like the weather, wait 5 minutes, it'll change, because that's pretty much what it is. But Adam is alongside. We're discussing the Predators and the Canucks, game number four coming up, 4 o'clock this afternoon. That's the puck drop. So keep that in mind, too. 4 o'clock puck drop. Max Herz will have the pregame for you at 3. Jared Stillman will be going 1 to 3 with a special edition of his show. So we are packed and stacked with Predators coverage going into today. And, you know, this series, we started off the show talking about this, has felt like a heavyweight fight.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's been an entertaining series, but I also feel like today could be the day where it goes up a notch. Because I think the Predators, while I'm not using the phrase must win, they need to win this game. I think that's the fair phrase to use, is need to win to go back to Vancouver for a game 5 with the series tied at 2. You would also guarantee a game 6. With a win today that would come back here to Bridgestone Arena. So I think they need to win that, but also give themselves a little bit of a confidence boost. But I feel like this team's going to come out swinging today. Maybe be a little pissed off for greatness just because of the way things went the other night. You said it, that they probably deserved to win the other night, even though the score did not go their way, and it was a 2-1 Vancouver victory.
Yeah, they absolutely... No, they'll absolutely need to be better tonight. Well, I mean, really, how much better could they have been? You know, they did a really good job getting pucks toward the net. You know, the Canucks were great at blocking shots, just like the Predators were great at blocking shots in game number 2. So they need to find a way around that in game 4 and make those adjustments. So, yeah, as I said earlier, this is not a must-win game because the Predators are not eliminated if they lose. But historically, a team that goes down 3-1, your chances of winning the series drop exponentially.
Yeah.
Especially when you're the road team and you have to win 2 of 3 in Vancouver in this particular case in order to do so. So, yeah, I think the Predators will play with that urgency, you know, try to knock this series back up at 2, try to win another game in Vancouver. But first things first, you know, I think there's a lot to like about the way they played in game number 3, particularly at 5-on-5. Of course, the power play needs to be better. And if they can do that, you know, get to DeSmith a little bit like we talked about just recently. I think it's important for them to make him a little bit more uncomfortable, get around the shot blockers of the Canucks and get pucks toward Casey DeSmith, because I feel like at times when he's had to make saves, he hasn't looked like super comfortable doing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, right.
And I think that's the key. We talked about earlier the first goal of the game in game number 2, that fluky goal by Anthony Beauvillier. Like, that's the kind of goal you need right off the hop. Get into the goalie's head a little bit and then attack. So, yeah, I anticipate a highly motivated Predators team because they know what's at stake in this game.
What's been your evaluation? We've talked about Casey DeSmith. What's been your evaluation of Juuse Saros in three games?
He did not have a good game in game number 1.
No, game 1 was definitely not good.
I don't, there was a terrible defensive breakdown. Was it on Dakota Joshua's goal, I believe, which was the second of the 2 goals. So I don't blame him for that. I mean, if you get that open look, not very many goalies are going to be able to stop it. I thought he was much better in game 2. And I mean, I thought he was okay in game 3. I mean, the 2 goals that he gave up were on the power play. You'd like him to make those saves, obviously, but they were good plays by JT Miller, and you know, to score the goal. And then he had a great setup for Brock Besser right in front for the second goal. So you'd like to see more, better penalty killing play, of course. But I mean, by and large, I think Saros has been fine. I mean, the thing that's been the issue for him, and it's been an issue for him this season, which is funny because it wasn't an issue for him last season, was he's not great at stopping shots when he can't see it. Now that seems, yeah, you know, seems self-explanatory, but I crunched these numbers before the series. There were 72 goalies who started 10 games in the regular season, at least 10 games. Saros was 63rd out of 72 in his save percentage on shots on net that were screened, and he was he was much better at it last year. I think he was like an 863 save percentage. Last year it was over 91, so a big drop off there.
Is that the size? Is that just? I mean, that's just something he can't handle.
Right, like, well, that's the easy thing to go towards, right? Well, he's smaller, but he was good at it last year.
Right.
So it's not like it's something that he's been bad at, you know, for many years. At least since last season, it was a precipitous drop. But I did the math after the first Canucks goal the other night. So up until JT Miller's first goal, four of the five goals that UC Saros had allowed in the series were screened. Right. Now, I'm not sure if the goal that Brock Besser scored counts. I don't think it does. But absolutely, four of the first five goals he allowed in the series were on shots that were screened. So I think that's something that the Canucks have obviously targeted. They're trying to make it difficult for UC Saros. So, Saros' teammates need to do a better job of clearing those guys out in front of the net so that he can see shots, because I know this is not rocket science, but if the goalie can see the shot, he has a much better chance of stopping it. Yeah. And Saros has not been good at stopping shots he can't see this season, and the Canucks are taking advantage of it.
Yeah, and that's, I'm sure, a point of emphasis for Andrew Brunette as they get ready for this game, of cleaning out the areas in front of Saros so he can see.
Yes.
That's where the defense has to do their job. So I agree with that assessment. Again, it goes back to what I was saying with the team overall, that, look, I don't think they've played poorly. I just think there's another level.
Yes, I would agree with that.
And both teams can say that. And game four, usually, like, if you're talking about a team that you know there's another level for them to go, and we've named the big hitters. We've named Josi, we've named Forsberg, we've named Saros, that it's like, okay, here's some good things, here's some bad things, but I know there's more. I think today's the day where you get.
Yeah, and I think
because they know that too. Like, they don't have to sit here and listen to us. They know that they need to do more.
Yeah, and to me, it starts. We talked about this earlier. It starts with Roman Josi.
I think
that when he is on his A game, I mean, there's a reason why he's one of the best defensemen in the league. His ability to generate offense from the back end is unrivaled by, Quinn Hughes is one of the few guys that can do it.
Two of the best defensemen in the National Hockey League are in this series.
Yes. I mean, I think about the defensemen that can generate offense from the back end the way that Roman Josi can. And the two that come to mind, I think the only two that really stand out are Quinn Hughes and Cale Makar. I mean, you could make an argument for Evan Bouchard in Edmonton. But really, I think it's those three are the class of the league in terms of generating offense from the back end. And Roman Josi won the Norris Trophy, by and large, because he was able to do that. And he's going to be a finalist for that award because of his ability to do that. And it just hasn't been there this series. And as I said earlier, Quinn Hughes hasn't been spectacular in this series. He has four assists, but I feel like he hasn't made any dazzling plays. He's been steady. But Josi, at least he was getting the puck toward the net as best as he could in Game 3. He had 11 shot attempts. 8 were blocked. 3 hit the net. Of course, you don't want him to have 8 shots blocked, but he was trying. I just think that he needs to help. He needs to help take over a game, and that's what when they were winning games at a ridiculous clip in the second half of the regular season, it was because Roman Josi in part was just carrying the team offensively in terms of tilting the ice in the team's favor when he was on the ice, both in goals and scoring chances and shot attempts. Like, all of those numbers were heavily in the Predators' favor when he was on the ice, and it hasn't really been the case in this series. And I think you need to see more from him first and foremost.
So, I'm going to amend something we talked about earlier, talking about just Bruno make some lineup changes. I don't think you can take Novak out now. It's his birthday.
Mm.
He'll get the birthday goal. The big birthday goal on his, for the playoffs. It's also Jeremy Lozon and Kevin Lankinen's birthday.
Well, you can't screw up three people's birthdays, right?
I know. I mean it's got to be a good omen.
You would think that. Usually, if you're a hockey player, You're good if you you know, you're gonna have a big game if it's your birthday or you just in your or your partner just had a baby.
Yeah,
like if you're
the
if,
leg, what was it, the leg one hat trick goal assist baby.
I vividly remember Tanner Jeannot having a Gordie Howe hat trick the first game after his child was born.
Yeah, you're right.
Like it's called dad strength.
Yeah,
I don't have very much of it, you know, compared to professional athletes. But I feel like if your birthday or you just had a kid, you're in for a good game. So maybe, as you said, that's the good omen for Tommy Novak specifically.
615-737-1025. It's Chase and Big Joe special Sunday edition. Adam in for Big Joe today. We're live at the Hank Williams Jr. Boogie Bar on the rooftop. Come by and see us. They got crafted cocktails, a local flavor. You can taste Nashville with the menu featuring Southern classics with a modern twist. Come by and see us. We're here all day until 3 o'clock, that is, until we head to Bridgestone Arena and get ready for a 4 o'clock puck drop. So come by and say hello. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Chase and Big Joe, Adam Vingen, we acknowledge him in today for Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Special coverage, special Sunday edition of our shows. Stillman and Company coming up next. So looking forward to that. He'll be on 1 to 3. Sean Henry going to join him at 2:30 live here from Hank Williams Jr. Boogie Bar. So looking forward to having the CEO of the Predators on site with Jared Stillman. You know, one thing that we'll get back into the Predators in a second, just kind of your thoughts on some of the other series going on. I fell asleep watching Vegas and Dallas last night. That one's been entertaining.
Yeah, that to me, when I was looking at the series before they started, I just did like this gut feeling, okay, what's the most watchable of these eight series? And Vegas and Dallas was my number one with a bullet. Like, two great teams, defending cup champion, best team in the, you know, versus the best team in the Western Conference. A lot of star power, no pun intended, on either side of the ice. That was a great game. Wyatt Johnston scored two goals for the Stars, including the game winner in overtime. Stars win 3-2, cut that deficit to 2-1. Peter DeBoer had a great line after the game, talking about just how great of a player Wyatt Johnston is at such a young age. Like I said, he's 20 years old. Keep in mind, they're in Las Vegas for this game. And DeBoer said, he's not old enough to go into the casino and play cards. So that's true. And he's a fabulous young player, led the Stars in goals this year. But, yeah, some interesting series around the league. You know, the Lightning got a big win yesterday. They were on the verge of elimination. They avoided being swept by the Panthers. They won 6-3.
I've enjoyed that series, even though it's 3-1, mm-hmm. Florida. I have enjoyed that series, but I feel like the rest of the East has been kind of boring.
Yeah, I mean, you expected the Rangers to have their way with the Capitals, and that's kind of what's been going on. They're up 3-0. I believe Game 4 is today.
Yes, it is after our game.
Yeah, so, you know, that series hasn't been too memorable. The Islanders avoided elimination. To me, that's the least watchable series. I just said Stars. Stars Golden Knights was the most watchable entering the postseason. Carolina New York was the least watchable, which is mostly because of the Islanders, because I just can't.
The good ones have been in the West, man.
I think that the I've seen the Bruins beat the Maple Leafs in the first round too many times, so you know I kind of watch that one because it's always kind of fun from afar to watch the Maple Leafs implode and see how everyone reacts to it. So that's what's been going on since the Bruins beat the Maple Leafs last night in Game 4. Colorado Winnipeg, man.
About heavyweight fights.
Yeah, that you know that first game was 7-6, a very high scoring series. That's been a lot of bad blood there. And you were talking about bad blood with the Canucks and the Predators, right? Well, these teams haven't played each other in the regular season. They hadn't played each other since before Christmas.
Yeah,
they haven't played in the playoffs in 13 years.
Yep.
So yeah, I mean, there's always a little ill will, but you were starting from scratch,
right?
Trying to build up that animosity.
But I feel like it happens naturally, like throughout the course of a series, teams just quit liking each other.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, the Avalanche and the Jets did not need any reason to hate each other. They played each other enough. They played a couple of times at the end of the regular season, so they've been stuck with each other for the past few weeks. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of bad blood there. And You know, the Oilers are just, you know, I like the Kings. I think they're a solid team, but just the Oilers have their number, man. I just, you know, right? If the Oilers beat the Kings in this first round, it'll be the third year in a row that the Oilers eliminate the Kings in the first round of the playoffs. So, you know, this series, you know, has been in, the one we're watching closely has been entertaining. It's been low event. It hasn't been high, you know, hasn't been high flying like Colorado and Winnipeg. But, you know, to me, you know, the series, yeah, the two series that I've made a point to watch games when I can are the ones that we've talked about: Vegas and Dallas, and Florida and Tampa Bay, just because those teams definitely do not like each other. Obviously, you've got the in-state rivalry there, and the Stars lost to the Golden Knights in six games in the Western Conference Final last year before the Golden Knights went on to win the Stanley Cup. So
Peter DeBoer probably feels some kind of way about it.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, that was you know, the Stars were absolutely dominant last night. You know, but it still needed overtime, and you know, Wyatt Johnston scored, you know, 20-year-old kid scored that goal, and I don't know what you do when you're in Vegas when you're 20 years old. You
go to bed,
I guess. call room service. Cirque du Soleil, not the you know, the sexy one that's like rated R. Maybe, well, I guess he could go to that one if he wanted to, but you can't really do a lot in Las Vegas when you're underage. So, but he scored two big goals, and he'll take it.
Yeah, you mentioned the Oilers and the Kings. I agree with you because, like, I think just like Toronto, the Oilers have a ton of pressure on them. Of okay. You have all this talent, and here's what you've done with it. So you got to keep moving on. The Kings don't care about all that. I think the Kings are a good team. I think this is another case of, and we can get into the, you know, should they go back to the old way of the playoffs, which I think they should. Like, I like the old 8-1, 7-2, you know, and then you reseed. I wish they'd do that because I think we're getting matchups that we want to see, but we don't want to see them in the first round. I mean, you're seeing, like, Dallas and Vegas, the way that the seeding worked out, those, especially with Vegas and their, you know, secret roster that they have, that's one that that's a Western Conference final.
Yes.
You know, that's not first round. Like, Florida and Tampa is an Eastern Conference final. You know, Toronto and Boston, that's Eastern Conference, but it is what it is. So, that's kind of how it's worked out. But I think the Oilers have that pressure on them that they know they got to win this series. LA is not going to make it easy for them, though.
No, and you know, the Kings are, you know, their bread and butter is playing solid defense and preventing teams from getting up and down the ice, and you know, it's hard to do when you're playing the likes of Connor McDavid and, you know, arguably the fastest player in the league. They're you know, the Kings are in an interesting area because it's like how many more playoff runs does Andre Kopitar and Drew Doughty have? And you know, they've got some, you know, key young players. I mean, he's not necessarily young anymore. I mean, he is young, but he's not young. Yeah. Like, Kevin Fiala has bloomed into a really good player for them. You know, it started in Minnesota, but I think he's been even better in Los Angeles.
And, agreed.
You know, Arvidsson
still plays a role.
Arvidsson still has a role when he's healthy. You know, he says he struggled with his health this year, didn't play in a lot of games. But, yeah, the best part is, well, if the Predators advance in this postseason, they'll play the winner of Edmonton and Los Angeles, and you're probably looking at Edmonton, and we know how the Predators play against the Oilers. It hasn't been pretty for a while, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. But yeah, the Florida Tampa series has been fun just because it's like Florida's the new kid on the block, right? They made it to the Stanley Cup final last year. They've been little brother to the Lightning for a long time. The Lightning are kind of entering that phase where they're perhaps, you know, that core, that one. A lot of the players are gone, but Steven Stamkos and Victor Hedman, Brayden Point, Nikita Kucherov, they're getting older. So it feels like a passing of the torch situation a little bit. But, yeah, Lightning, we get another game of that because the Lightning avoided elimination yesterday. So I think that game's Tuesday.
Which one?
Lightning-Panthers game five.
It's tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, you got
that's and it's on ESPN. I got to be honest. Like, I like both. You know what ESPN and Turner have done, but I get used to everything being on ESPN, and then it shifts to TNT or TBS, and then I got to go back. So I'm kind of getting used to that. You know, forever it was NBC, and you knew kind of where everything was going to be. But yeah, no, it's tomorrow. So a quick question on this, because we always see this with, you know, the first round especially. What coach do you think is on the hot seat? Is Sheldon Keefe on the hot seat?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the funny thing is, I think they gave him a new contract that hasn't even started yet. So, would be firing him before it even started. That's not great. I'm looking at the series that are playing. Yeah, I don't see, you know.
I don't think anybody else.
No, Sheldon Keefe, no.
I know John Cooper for a minute.
John Cooper will coach as long as John Cooper wants to coach, I think. Jim Montgomery's on the hot seat. Brendan Moore's not. Patrick Waugh's new. Rick Bonus isn't, I don't think. Jared Bednar isn't. Peter Laviolette isn't. Spencer Carberry isn't. DeBoer isn't. Cassidy isn't. So really, Sheldon Keefe is the one, I think, whose seat is the absolute hottest. It's scorching. If the Maple Leafs lose the series, which they're probably going to do, you can't keep running it back with the same group of players. And they were sniping at each other on the bench last night. That was getting a lot of play. Matthews and Marner and Nylander were all kind of bickering with each other on the bench. And that was, Marner threw his gloves off in disgust, and Kelly Rudy called him an eight-year-old child on Hockey Night in Canada, so he got called out on national television. It was a whole thing. Yeah, I think if the Maple Leafs lose, there has to be changes, and the easiest one to do is firing the coach.
Yeah, well, and I think trade Mitch Marner.
Yeah.
I think he's the one. You're not trading Matthews.
No, you're not trading Matthews. You just signed Nylander, and Tavares doesn't have significant trade value unless you're retaining salary and sweetening the deal because he's getting a little old. So, yeah, Marner is the one that if they're going to blow up that core four, what they call it up there, they're going to blow up that core four, it's going to be Marner.
I think – let's see if I can pull the tweet up. I think it was Wyshynski that maybe was quote tweeting somebody that basically said – oh, here we go. A very smart hockey person put this in my head recently, and I think this is the perfect time to float it. To Utah, Mitch Marner. To Toronto, Clayton Keller. Straight up.
That would be interesting. I mean, I think, you know what, like some players, I've never covered Mitch Marner, and he's a really good player. But
sure.
some players don't do well in the spotlight. I think Marner would be the star player for the Utah, whatever the heck they're going to be. And Keller has been a good player for a long time in Arizona. He doesn't get his due because he played in Arizona.
Right.
But, I mean, that's interesting. That would be an interesting move. I mean, I could see the benefit for both sides.
Yep, could be very interesting. We'll get back into the Predators and the Canucks series coming up next. He's Adam Vingan in today for Big Joe Dubin. We're live at the Hank Williams Jr. Boogie Bar on the rooftop. Here at 419 Broadway, it's a great atmosphere. A lot of Preds fans have made their way in here. Jared Stillman is here. He'll take over at 1 o'clock and also talk to Sean Henry at 2:30. Much more ahead, Chasing Big Joe with Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Special Sunday edition, Adam Vingan in today for Big Joe Dubin, as we're live at the Hank Williams Jr. Boogie Bar on the rooftop, 419 Broadway, getting ready for game number 4 between the Predators and the Vancouver Canucks at Bridgestone Arena. 4 o'clock puck drop. It's a very beautiful day, so if you're just getting out of church or something, come on downtown, hang out for a little bit, and you're right next to Bridgestone Arena. You can go and get to your seat early. Now, we were talking about some of the game op stuff, towel waivers, all that. Taylor Lewan tweeted earlier, might need a catfish today. Can't say why. Can anyone get me a catfish ASAP? So I don't know if there's something planned there. Could we see J.C. Latham maybe show up? The Titans' first-round pick? Who knows? So something to potentially pay attention to. I get into that stuff. But obviously, at the end of the day, I want the Predators to win the game. Not using the phrase must win. Using the phrase need to win for this one today. I need to see another level from this team. You mentioned it earlier, Adam. I need to see more Roman Josi. I definitely need to see more Philip Forsberg. Because I'm just going to be honest with you. For a majority of this series, I know he had the big goal in game 2, and he's had a couple of points. But number 9 has not been number 9. Like, that has been – I've looked at times and I've seen the number 9 jersey, and I'm going, who is that? I need to see Philip Forsberg. I need Forsberg to do Forsberg things today.
Yeah, that goes without saying, just because, you know, think about when you look at Forsberg's playoff, when you look at Forsberg's playoff performance as a whole, you know, throughout his career, you know, he's been a solid playoff performer, but it hasn't been the same since, you know, the 2018 season. That was the President's Trophy season. So in his past five playoff years, so that includes the first three games of this series. So since the 2019 series against the Stars, he has 14 points in 23 playoff games. He has 8 goals and 6 assists. For a lot of players, that's a solid line.
Yeah.
Not for Philip Forsberg.
Not after 48 goals.
Not after 48 goals. And by comparison, in his first four playoff years, he had 22 goals and 42 points in 55 games.
Yeah.
More in line of what you would expect from Philip Forsberg. So he has not taken over in the postseason the way that we saw early in his career. So he absolutely needs to do that. And as you said, especially after the regular season he had when, you know, he took a step up, you know. There are times where I wasn't sure that, you know, Philip Forsberg was going to be a 40-goal scorer at all, let alone almost a 50-goal scorer. You know, he had a fabulous regular season, and because of that, expectations are heightened, and you need more from him. That goes without saying. It was good to see him get on the board with the goal he scored in Game 2. I think it was important for the team, but especially important for him to score that kind of goal, get that confidence up. But, yeah, it's just that line, too. You know, it feels like his line with Nyquist and O'Reilly, you know, they kind of been around it, but they're not taking over like they did during the regular season. I mean, there was only one forward line in the NHL that was on the ice for more of their team's goals at 5-on-5 than the Predators' top line, and that was the Rangers' line of Panarin, Trocheck, and Lafreniere. So they were the second highest scoring 5-on-5 line in the league during the regular season. And I don't feel like we've seen a little bit of that in this series, but not enough. You know, that line helps carry this team offensively, and you know, if you're not getting it from them, you know, you're going to need to find it from other sources. But, yeah, absolutely. Philip Forsberg, big game for him today for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you need it. And the other thing, too, I thought going into this series, because he did something that he hasn't done since, I want to say 2017, played 82 games.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, was a really big deal. I don't know if people really looked at it like I did. I looked at that as a really big deal because I think that, you know, all the accolades that he's gotten this year, you know, he was a 40-goal scorer, you know, a couple years ago with Duchesne. He would have had that much, much more in his career had he played 82 games. But he always got hit with some sort of injury, you know, at points during his career. He didn't have that this year. So I thought you were getting a 90-something point, 48-goal Philip Forsberg who played a full season with a ton of confidence going into this series. And I just feel like I don't know if that confidence has been shaken or if it's just not there. Like something has just seemed very off. And look, I know that he wasn't practicing down the stretch, and so obviously there was something he was playing through, and that probably is still with him, but it didn't seem to slow him down at the end of the season.
No, and I would expect, you know, I would expect more, you know, more from him today. You know, we've talked about Roman Josi quite a bit. We've talked about Justy Saros. You know, the thing we haven't talked about, you know, which quote unquote secondary player is going to be, you know, is going to make his impact felt. You know, we talked about Jason Zucker. Jason Zucker has, I think, had a really good series. You know, I think he's done what they wanted him to do when they traded for him at the deadline. But
agreed.
We've talked about the potential of Tommy Novak coming out of the lineup. We've talked about Luke Evangelista seemingly taking to the Stanley Cup playoffs quite well for his first time. You know, where, you know, when we talk about the core players of this team, you know, the guys that have been here for a while. We always mention Josi. We mention Forsberg. We mention Saros. You know, but one player that we don't talk about a lot that we probably should be, he's not a quote-unquote core player, but the guy's been here forever, is Colton Sissons.
Agreed.
I mean, Colton Sissons.
I call him the glue guy.
Yeah, he's been a part of this team for close to a decade now.
Yeah.
And he's been an important part. We obviously know what he did in Game 6 of the Western Conference Final in 2017. But, you know, Colton Sissons has been through the same battles that Forsberg has been through and Josi has been through. He's, you know, he's one of the guys left that, you know, they're, you know, in terms of looking back to the, you know, the days of this team with Johansson and Arvidsson and Fisher, and, you know, he's one of the few guys left from that group.
He's one of three guys that played for Barry Trotz.
That's crazy to think about. Yeah, he did play
for Barry. Yossi Forsberg Sissons.
Yeah, see, that's how far you have to go back. Colton Sissons played for Barry Trotz when he was the coach here, and he hasn't coached here since 2014. Yeah. Like, that's how far you have to go back. So I would love to see Colton Sissons step up. I think him and Zucker make a good pair. I like the connection that they seem to have. I would love to see Colton Sissons have a big game today.
So would I.
Yeah.
I mean, we remember the Western Conference Final when that was his breakout game or breakout moment, however you want to put it.
And then he was the top line center in the Stanley Cup Final.
Yeah, he was. So I agree that it's got to be, and it's probably got to be more than one person, but I think that Yossi, as you mentioned, Forsberg, as I mentioned, they have to be a part of the equation. If Yossi and Forsberg don't get to another level, they're not winning the series.
Like, no.
I mean, and maybe you throw Sissons into that too, but I think those two have got to do something more. Otherwise, they're not winning the series. And Saros has to play well.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely. Like, I do think that they need to be better. And, you know, you look at the other side, we talked about this. I think JT Miller by far has been the most impactful player on either side of the ice in this series. He was great in game one. You know, he factored into both goals for the Canucks in game three, had the goal on the power play, then set up Besser on the power play. He's been all over the place. He is one of nine players this season to have 100 points. But, like, we don't really hear a lot about him because he's not, you think about the other players that also scored 100 points in the NHL this season. Matthews, McDavid, Panarin, Pasternak, McKinnon. Like, he's not in that class, but he's a really good player. And, you know, it has been for a while. And, you know, Elias Pettersson has had a rough go of it in the series. He's had a rough go of it now for a little while. It stretches back into the regular season. The fact that they're up in the series and we have yet to see anywhere close to the best from Elias Pettersson might be a little bit concerning if you're
it's
a Predators fan. Because if he gets his game to where it is, That's a difficult proposition because he scored, I think, 100 points last season. So he's a really good player. As I mentioned, Quinn Hughes, good, but not spectacular. Like, their top player, I mean, JT Miller has been a difference maker, but, Besser scored the other night. But I feel like their top players are, they're playing okay, but they're not playing up to their capability, and they're still winning the series. The Predators have the same issue, but they're down in the series. So they need their top players to raise their game, too, because if the Canucks' top players beat them to that, then it's going to be an issue.
I know you look at this objectively, you know, as a media member, but, like, looking at it from a fan's point of view, to me, JT Miller is that guy that, like, you hate him, but if he was on your team, you'd love him.
Oh yeah, I mean,
if Barry Trotz swung a trade for JT Miller over the summer, which I know is not going to happen, but if he did that, I'd be like, oh yes, give me JT Miller. Like, I'm all about that. He's a pissant.
Yes.
You know, when you're playing against him, but he's that guy that you want on your team.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's been in the postseason now. He was early in his career, he was in the playoffs with the Rangers. He played for the Lightning before he played for the Canucks. He didn't win the Stanley Cup with the Lightning. He was gone before then. But, yeah, he's a disturber out there.
I mean,
he ruffles feathers, the best type. Those are my favorite types of players. Are the guy, like, I mean, look, I love watching the skilled guys like Connor McDavid and Nathan MacKinnon and Nikita Kucherov, just like any other hockey fan. I love watching those guys. But my favorite players have always been the guys that can do all that, and they piss you off, too.
Yeah.
Like, they get under your skin. And you know, the Canucks have, you know, like, you know, they've got a guy like Connor Garland who also likes to do that. He's a good player, but he's not JT Miller. Like, you know, I'm trying to think of, like, other good examples of that around the NHL. Like, those top players that...
Well, I'll give you one that Preds fans are probably gonna get mad at me about, but one from back in the day. Ryan Kessler was that guy.
Yes,
back in the
absolutely.
Day.
Like
everybody here hates him. And by the way, you know, Vancouver, nice little, you know, they brought him out and his son out and everything. Like, hated him in that series. Hated him when he was with the Ducks. Of course, he and Johansson had their battle. But that was the type of guy that, yeah. But if he was on your team, like, you want that. Like, that's the kind of – and even at one point in time, maybe Corey Perry, but not so much. Now, Corey's just a dirty player.
Like I've pulled up a list. Now, I've got, like, Brad Marchand.
Yep.
Matthew Tkachuk.
Yep.
Like guys like that that get under your skin and they make you so mad if you're rooting against them, but they're so talented. They put up a ton of points. Brad Marchand has 8 points in 4 games for the Bruins in this series. Like that, I mean, that's what Marchand is capable of doing. And we saw what Tkachuk did. He completely energized the Florida Panthers last season. He was fabulous in the playoffs. JT Miller is in that same mold.
Yeah.
And he's made the points may not be there like it is, like I just mentioned, for Marchand in that series, but he's making an impact on the ice. The Canucks are dominating play when he's on the ice, and that's what you need. So you need the Predators players, the top players, to reach that level, because if Miller continues to play like this and Pettersson joins him and Hughes joins him, the Predators are in trouble.
Indeed they are. He is Adam Vingan. I'm Chase McCabe. We will come back and wrap up our portion, but we're nowhere near done. Jared Stillman is ready to go with a special Sunday edition of Stillman & Company coming your way at 1 o'clock. If you got any final thoughts for us, 615-737-1025. Questions for Adam, you can call, you can text. But give our final thoughts on Game 4. Coming up next, Chase and Big Joe. Adam Vingan in today, live at Hank Williams Jr. Boogie Bar on the rooftop, 419 Broadway, 1025-1063 The Game.
Andrew, in terms of process and what you might be able to carry over to next game, did you like what you saw in the neutral zone, and how might that impact what you do next game?
I liked what we did pretty much in all three zones. You know, I could get nitpicky in the offensive zone. I think it starts a lot in how we get out of our zone. And I think when we're at our best, we get out fast from our zone to their zone quick, and then we pressure them, and then we kind of get into a short ice game. And that's when we're at our best. I'm sure Vancouver, when I watch them, that reminds me a lot of them. But it starts in the D zone. I thought our sticks were much better. I thought we were quicker to close. I thought we broke the puck out a little quicker. And then we were able to stretch things out and kind of get into our game.
Jason Big Joe, Adam Vingan alongside here at Hank Williams Jr. Boogie Bar up on the rooftop. That was Andrew Burnett. After the loss the other night, Adam, the best in the world, hanging out with us, and always appreciate that. So what has kind of been your – he was talking about the neutral zone, they're playing the neutral zone. What's kind of been your observation of their play in the neutral zone?
I feel like the Canucks have done a good job of cutting them off at the pass and making it difficult for them to get through with speed and carry the puck into the zone, which is – you know, obviously a big part of their success and most team success when they want to get out and attack on the rush. So I do think that's an adjustment that needs to be made. One thing that I did like about the Predators, this is not in the neutral zone, but one thing I did like about the Predators in game number 3 is that I thought they were better at generating scoring chances off the cycle, that they had more opportunities that way than they did in the first 2 games, particularly at 5-on-5. And yeah, I think, you know, this series, like we said this at the top of the show, I mean, the way this series has gone, I mean, you can look at the scores, you know, 4-1, 4-2, was it 4-1, 4-2, 4-1, 2-1.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the score, you know, I heard John Cooper talk about this with the series in Florida. You know, it's not like the scoreboard is heavily tilted in one, like even though the Panthers were up 3-0, it's not like the scoreboard was heavily tilted in the Panthers' favor. And that's what it's been like in this series, too. Although it's 2-1 Vancouver, they haven't been kicking the Predators' butt for 3 games and they, you know, anything like that. So, I mean, I really do think that this series is still sort of, it still can go either way.
Predators went.
Yep. So, game 5. Tuesday. Game 6, if necessary, would be Friday back here in Nashville. So,
and yeah, Tuesday is another 9 o'clock start, and everybody that complains about that, look at a map. it's the West Coast. So of course, it's going to be a 9 o'clock start.
Yes. But, you know, the fact that Vancouver's on the Pacific Coast actually makes it a little bit better. Like, it's not – when it's two central teams playing each other,
right,
that's when you get the 8:30s.
Yeah, and then I get, you know, griping about that. But,
yes. Like,
you know, if it's West Coast, then, okay, you know you're going to have a late night if you're watching back here. So that's just kind of a part of it. But we've hit on a lot of different things today. In your mind, what do the Predators need to do to win Game 4?
the need to not get as many shots blocked, which is, look, and the
quality
it,
shots to the net.
Go right. On. Well, like, you know, the Predators did a good job of blocking shots in game two. The Canucks did a great job of blocking shots in game three. I mean, the Predators, as I said to you at the top of the show, if you hold your opponent to 7 5-on-5 shots in a game, you should probably win the game.
Yep.
But they weren't able to get their shots through enough to Casey DeSmith. They had plenty, but I feel like they could be more dangerous. I think it's, as I've said multiple times already, I think one key is you got to get like a goal early, but you got to get like a fluky goal early. Think about the goal at the start of game two. I think you need that kind of goal where perhaps it rattles Casey DeSmith a little bit.
Yep.
Get the crowd into
get
it
in
a
his
little,
head.
Yeah, that's what that to me was a big part of the win in game two, was getting that early goal, putting some doubt, putting some doubt in the minds of the Canucks and their fans, and I think that's what they need to do again. The Predators need to do again today. So, you know, those would be my two keys. But yeah, a greasy type goal, maybe from a guy like talked about Colton Sissons. He yep. scores plenty of those. A goal from him in that kind of way can get this this Predators game going.
Andrew Brunette will speak in less than an hour, so maybe we'll get even though I don't know if he's going to tell us, but maybe we'll get more thoughts on the lineup. We know Spencer Stastny will be out. He's week to week with an upper body injury.
You still think you would put that? You're favoring Fabro in the situation, going in the lineup.
I'm not. I'd put Barry in. If okay. it's me making the decision, I'm putting Tyson Barry in because of what we talked about earlier, because of power play.
Mm-hmm.
And the power play is struggling. He can help the power play. What I think is going to happen is they'll put Fabro in.
Probably.
That's probably what will happen.
Yeah, that'll probably be what happens. But yeah, if you're looking to get the power play going, yeah, that's the issue, though, is you don't want Barry to be in the lineup just for the power play. You do need him to play at even strength,
sure.
too. But yeah, I mean, my gut tells me it's probably going to be Fabro in the lineup. But yeah, I mean, if you're looking for a spark on the power play, I can see why you would want to put Barry in.
Do you see any forward changes? I'm going to say no.
I'm going to say yes. I'm going to go out on a limb. It's not really a limb, but I'm going to go out on a small twig and say that Cody Glass enters the lineup in place of Tommy Novak.
So Novak out, Glass.
That's just a guess.
I wouldn't hate that.
Complete guess.
I don't know. I just kind of have a hunch that, like, again, it's what we talk about of, you know, is he overthinking it? Is he chasing the lineup? You don't want to get into that.
No.
But, again, it wouldn't surprise me, but I'm going to say no. Okay. I'm going to say I want Barry. It'll be Fabro. And then no forward changes.
Okay.
And then Vancouver probably rolls out what they've been rolling out too.
Yeah, so. I don't see any changes on Vancouver side at all.
Yeah, but
unless there's like an injury or an illness or that we're not expecting. But
I'll make another prediction. Maybe it's a bold prediction. Maybe it's not. I do think Philip Forsberg scores.
Okay.
I think Forsberg. Nobody has to give him the message. He knows. Same with the OC. Yeah, I think the big guns play like the big guns today. Predators win. I think this is a 4-2 with an empty netter at the end. So it's 3-2 going late in the third. Maybe they score an empty netter, 4-2.
Okay.
So tied up at 2, going back to Vancouver. That's what I think happens.
All right. Well, we'll see soon enough.
Do you feel like that?
I think that's a reasonable prediction. I mean, okay. My prediction was they were going to win. I was on with Caroline and Derek. Between games 2 and 3, and my prediction was they were going to win 3-2 in overtime on a goal from Ryan McDonagh. I was trying to be as like off the wall as I possibly could. So this is at least more in line with what could actually happen.
Yeah. So we will see. That is going to do it for our portion. But don't you go anywhere, because Jared Stillman is ready. He's got all his contraptions set up, ready to go and talk Preds for 2 hours with you. I know it's been building since Friday night, so he's got to get it out. He's also probably got some draft frustrations that may help some of this along.
It might be
so.
Best for J.C. Latham not to be at the game. Jared's going to be there. That's all I'm saying.
Maybe.
J.C., if you're listening, maybe skip. maybe sit this one out.
Yeah, or Rand Carthon.
I'm not going to tell. I can tell J.C. Latham what to do from afar, because I would never say it to his
face. I haven't told Jared this, but actually it's Jared Stillman and Rand Carthon waving the towel today together.
Oh.
So we'll see how that goes.
Will there be blood on that towel at the end of that? I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. Could be interesting. But again, come by Hank Williams Jr. Boogie Bar on the rooftop, 419 Broadway. It's a fantastic place overlooking Broadway, and it's right next to Bridgestone Arena. So stop in here, hang out for a little bit, and then head on over for the game. Jared has it until 3 o'clock. Then Max Herz will take over with the pregame show. And then, of course, puck drop just after 4. For Adam Vingan, I'm Chase McCabe. Have a great rest of your day. Stick around. Stillman & Company is next on 102.5, 106.3.